Hello, this is Roz Friedman reading the Reader's Digest. The first article is from this section called Everyday Heroes. An artist fights a devastating forest fire, one can of spray paint at a time. Painting Paradise by Andy Simmons. It was America's deadliest wildfire in at least 100 years and the most destructive in California history. The campfire started at 6:33 a.m. on November 8, 2018, touched off by faulty electrical transmission lines in the town of Paradise. It burned for 17 days and consumed 153,336 acres north of Sacramento. In all, the fire caused $16.5 billion in damage, destroying nearly 19 buildings, leaving 50,000 homeless and killing 85. The beauty of this beautifully named place was gone. Shane Grammer grew up 15 miles away in Chico, and he followed the news of the fire's deadly path from Los Angeles, where the 47-year-old father of three works as a creative director for Disney's theme parks. Grammer still has friends in the Paradise area. When his childhood buddy Shane Edwards posted pictures of his white chimney, the only part of his house to survive, Grammer felt helpless, and then he had an idea. "I've got to paint that chimney," he said, told Inside Edition. "I'm not trying to say anything. It's just that I'm an artist, and it was an opportunity for me to express and be an artist." On December 31st, amid the rubble, charred trees, and burned-out husks of cars, Grammer spent 3 hours spray-painting a strikingly eerie black-and-white image of a woman on the chimney, a reminder perhaps of the beauty of life or even just of life itself. Grammer posted the image on Instagram. The victims of the fire especially could not contain themselves. "Beautiful and haunting," one said. Another posted, "You bring beauty and hope." Suddenly, Grammer realized that what he had thought was a purely artistic expression had morphed into something deeper, the hallmark of true art. "When the first mural moved, as so many people in this community, I knew I had to come back up," Grammer told WRCR-TV in Reading. Over a period of three months, he returned 8 times, painting 17 portraits of victims and biblical figures on walls. "There is hope," he explains. "There is beauty in the ashes." Outside one house, he found a photo of an 8-year-old named Eleanor. Seeing it as a sign, he painted a mural of her on the lone wall of her home that was left standing. It was, Grammer says, a stamp that life was here and that life can continue to be here. The portrait has special meaning for the home's owner. Eleanor's father, Greg Wedig, recalls how she used to play just feet away from where the mural was painted. "She would constantly be digging in the mud, and if it was right below the kitchen windows, so we could always keep an eye on her," he says. The tree that was there, that was this beautiful maple that just made everything in the kitchen red. Eleanor herself returned once to admire the painting. Grammer's work in Paradise has now become a movement. He has traveled the world painting murals in dark places that sorely needed some light. An orphanage in Tijuana, Mexico, a youth ministry in San Francisco, a nonprofit for child sex trafficking survivors in Cambodia. "I want to do something powerful and create art that moves people," he says. Ironically, that first painting on the chimney in Paradise survived only a few months. The bulldozer is a cruel art critic. Grammer couldn't be more delighted. It means that the spirit of Paradise is rising again. The next article in the Everyday Heroes section is titled Peak Performance by Andy Simmons. Colorado's Gray Peaks rises 14,278 feet above sea level, high enough the trees can't grow toward the top, though there are plenty of shrubs, rocks, and boulders. It was in this unforgiving terrain that Bev Weldestead was unlucky enough to rupture the anterior cruciate ligament and meniscus in her left knee. It was August 2018, and she, 56, was on her way back down the trail with three friends. A storm was brewing, and they were anxious to get off the mountain. When they approached a rocky drop of a couple of feet, Weldestead decided that instead of shimmying down on her butt, the safe way to go, she would leap. She landed on her left leg, and then she heard the snap. Every step after that was agony. Before long, she had to stop. As one friend ran down to get help, a number of other hikers, all strangers, attempted to help her down the narrow trail by walking on either side of her to support her weight. but that proved slow and dangerous. One man was so close to the ledge I could see rocks tumbling down from where he stepped on them, Weldestet says. Finally, after one hiker, Matt asked her, how do you feel about a fireman's carry? Before she knew it, he had lifted her over his shoulder. Now I'm not tiny, says Weldestet, a former college basketball star. Matt clearly couldn't carry her all the way down by himself, so six hikers and one of her friends took turns carrying her while she tried to make light of a difficult situation. I told them I wanted to meet a lot of guys, but this isn't the way I wanted to do it, she said. 3 hours and 2 rock-strewn miles later, this human conveyor belt finally met the medics who took her to the hospital. She was mostly recovered from her ill-fated hike, but she, Weldestet knows, she'll never shake one thing from that day, the memory of the band of strangers who came to her rescue. I'm still in awe. The next article in the Reader's Digest is titled Department of Wit. Dear Mother Goose, a fine feathered friend advises some real characters by Emma Spann from Slate.com. Dear Mother Goose, my husband recently passed away, killed by our next door neighbor, baked into a pie and eaten, and now my son Peter is acting out. He keeps sneaking into his neighborhood's property and stealing his vegetables. I sent him to bed with chamomile tea. His three sisters don't misbehave this way. Is this just an instance of boys will be boys, or are there deeper issues here that I should be concerned about? Written by Mama Rabbit. Dear Mama Rabbit, this is a behavioral problem that demands action far beyond chamomile tea. Peter sounds very troubled, understandably so, given what your family has been through. I realize that money may be tight, but you should consider looking for a new place, or perhaps even find friends or family to crash with temporarily so that you don't have to keep living directly next door to the people who ate your husband. That must be very upsetting for all of you. Dear Mother Goose, I am friends with a wonderful boy whom I love very much. We used to spend lots of time together, but as he's grown older, our relationship has become more one-sided. I was delighted to offer him all my apples and branches for his own personal profit and even to be chopped down for his sailing hobby. I just want to make him happy. But is a thanks or a how are you doing tree really so much to ask? And it's signed Tree. Dear Tree, this may be hard to hear, but when you see yourself as a giving tree at this point, you are more of a codependent tree. I am not excusing the behavior of this boy who sounds like a selfish jerk, but you obviously get something out of being a martyr. Set some boundaries with the boy and then enforce them. That isn't selfish. It's just learning how to take care of yourself and breaking this unhealthy dynamic. Think about what would make you happy outside of this relationship. Yoga, painting, decomposing into food for fungi and insects, and then pursue that. I think you'll find that healthy boundaries are truly the best gift you and this boy can give each other. Dear Mother Goose, I am aggressively pursued by someone, I'll call him SIA, who is bizarrely obsessed with getting me to eat green eggs and ham. He has offered his explanation of where the ham and eggs came from, why they are green, or why he cares if I eat them. I have turned him down calmly and clearly, but he's following me everywhere. Nevertheless, SIA thinks I might like the food. He has brought a mouse, a fox, and a goat to me as if that would change my mind. He is always polite and friendly. Still, this experience has been very stressful. Am I being unreasonable? Should I just eat this food to get him to go away? Anon. Dear Anon, this is a person with extremely unhealthy, perhaps even dangerous boundary issues. You describe SIA as polite and friendly, but there is nothing polite or friendly about stalking you and insisting that you try a mysterious meat product that you have repeatedly declined. No is a complete sentence, not an opportunity to bring goats into a debate. Sure, you might like the green eggs and ham, so what? Even if you did, it wouldn't justify his creepy overinvestment in what you eat. If you haven't already, block SIA on your phone, email, and all social media platforms and remain firm. If he turns up again with or without a mouse or a fox, if you turn down his green ham 27 times, but then cave in and try it, all you are teaching him is that he has to pester you 28 times to get what he wants. The next article in the Reader's Digest is from the section called We Found a Fix. 9 Tricks to Improve Your Life. 1. Hang a picture with a fork. decorating. Having trouble getting your picture frame wire to catch on the nail in the wall? Use a fork. Place it facing out with the handle sticking skyward and the nail or screw wedged between the middle lines. The fork's natural contours will cause it to stick out from the wall at a slight angle. Since slide the picture wire behind the fork until it reaches the nail, then remove the fork. 2. Reduce wrinkles without an iron. Travel. If your hotel room doesn't have an iron, try this trick to get the worst of the wrinkles out. On a flat surface, place a damp towel over the wrinkled clothing and press down to smooth out deep creases. Then hang to air dry. You can also use the hotel tea kettle. When the water is boiling, hold your clothing item about a foot away from the steam. 3. Don't leave your car on while you fill up. Auto. According to the Petroleum Equipment Institute of Static Electricity, can ignite vapors from the gas station pump, starting a fire. This is more likely in colder months when the air is dry. Make sure your engine is off before you reach for the nozzle and avoid getting back into the car, which creates static when your clothing rubs against the seat until you've finished refueling. 4. Protect your skin from your phone health. Electronics that contain metals such as nickel and cobalt, as some cell phones do, can cause an allergic reaction in some people. If you have red, dry, or itchy patches of skin on your ear, hand, or cheek, pick up a comb kit to test for the suspect metals. They're also used in jewelry and belt buckles. You can protect yourself by setting your phone to speaker, using an earpiece, or putting a cover and clear film screen on your phone. 5. Get urine out of the carpet. Pets. Club soda works wonders on pet urine and other tough stains. Blot up the offending liquid, then soak the spot with club soda. Blot again and scrub with diluted carpet shampoo if needed. 6. Water hanging plants. Home. If you can't quite reach a hanging plant with a watering can, ice cubes might help. Just toss several cubes into the pot. Bonus, the slow-melting ice won't cause a sudden downpour from the drain hole. 7. Take your router out of the closet. Technology. Having open space for its signal can make a remarkable improvement on your Wi-Fi speed, explains Ryan Hansen, a Verizon Business Internet specialist. Hansen also notes that if you have a big home, the distance from the router to your devices might create connectivity issues. To create a seamless network, it might be worth investing in Wi-Fi extenders. They start at about $30. 8. Rinse whole grains. Food, even though grains such as rice, barley, and quinoa are boiled in water or broth until tender, they require an earlier round of rinsing to remove excess starches, dirt, and germs. Plus, quinoa has a natural coating of saponin, a substance that gives it a bitter taste. 9. Save on prescriptions, money. Even if you have insurance, ask whether your prescription will cost less if you pay for the drug directly. Sometimes that price is less than your insurance copay. If the drug is covered by your insurance plan and your pharmacy participates in your plan, most insurers will count a purchase such as this towards your out-of-pocket expenses, so it will still help you fulfill your deductible. Just be sure to complete any necessary paperwork. The next article in the Reader's Digest is from the section called Everyday Miracles. The Bus Crash Angel by Douglas Siegel from the book Struck. The phone rings. I wait for the answer machine to get it, but for some reason it's not picking up. I exhale, annoyed because I know the call. It's either going to be for my wife, Susan. She's the only one who receives calls on the home line, and she left to take Alice to school 10 minutes ago. Or it's the latest of 300 attempts to sell me something I have absolutely no interest in. Hello, I say, an edge in my voice. Daddy, it's me. It's Alice, my 12-year-old daughter. Mommy was just in a car accident. My heart stops and then begins pounding. Are you all right? Yes. Is Mommy? A deep sob. I don't know. I don't think so. Come quick. I sprint a few blocks to what looks like a shoot for a disaster movie. Fire engines, police cars, and ambulances are randomly parked in the street. Helicopters circle. A city bus is on the wrong side of the road. In front of it are the smashed remains of Susan's car. Susan is pinned under the dashboard. There is no front windshield, no front end for that matter. Alice is standing on the corner crying, covered in tiny shards of glass, but uninjured, inconceivable. Susan isn't so lucky, but she is alive. It turns out she has broken nearly every bone in her body, and she will spend almost 3 months in the hospital. More than 2 years later, Susan and I were at an event at our synagogue celebrating Martin Luther King Day, Jr. Our temple's cantor and musical director, Danny, rushed up to us. He said excitedly, "There's a woman here tonight from one of the church choirs who you have to meet." He returned with an African-American woman with a bright, glowing smile. She told us she lived in the apartment building by where the wreck had happened. That morning, she had rushed to the street, still in her bathroom, and seen Alice standing by the side of the wrecked car, crying. She approached her, asking, "Is that your mom in there, Alice?" And the woman said, "Let's pray together." Sweet, innocent Alice looked at this woman wearing a cross around her neck and said, "Okay, but you should know I'm Jewish." The woman smiled. She took Alice's hand, held it in her chest, to her chest, and said, "That's okay. In here, we're all the same." Alice told her that she needed to call me, but her backpack with her phone was trapped inside the crushed vehicle. So the woman lent Alice her phone. After the accident, she said she had continued to pray for our family. We had our picture taken together. As we were saying goodbye, she hugged us all warmly. We realized we had never been formally introduced, so she said to me, "I'm sorry, I never got your name." I told her it was Doug, and she paused as if maybe she hadn't heard me. I repeated, "Doug, like Douglas." She looked at us and said, "Wait, your name is Susan?" Susan nodded. "And your name is Douglas?" The woman put her hand over her heart. "Oh, my goodness," she said, "my name is Susan Douglas." This article was excerpted from the book Struck by Douglas Siegel. The next article in the Reader's Digest is titled 13 Things, Soaring Facts About Hot Air Balloons by Jen McCaffery. 1. More than a century before the Wright brothers' flights in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, brothers Joseph Michael and Jacques-Étienne Montgolfier launched an unmanned 500-pound balloon over Annonay, France, that stayed aloft for about 10 minutes. The year was 1783, and King Louis XVI soon wanted a demonstration. So the Montgolfiers sent up a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. As the king, the queen, Marie Antoinette, and 130,000 other people witnessed the historic flight over Versailles, the animals landed safely. 2. France became the epicenter of ballooning, and Americans in Paris, including Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, and John Jay, jumped on the bandwagon. Travelers may hereafter literally pass from country to country on the wings of the wind, wrote Jay, who took time out from negotiating the Treaty of Paris to watch a flight. 3. Ballooning is still a big spectator sport. The largest event in the U.S., the Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta, attracted almost 900,000 people over 9 days in 2018. A meteorological phenomenon known as the Albuquerque Box, predictable wind patterns that let pilots land close to where they launched, have made the area a ballooning hotspot. 4. Commonly made from heat-resistant nylon or polyester, the colorful, usually 80-foot-tall balloon part, called the envelope, is laid out on the ground pre-flight to be partially filled with cold air. Then, to create the lift required for takeoff, the air is heated by propane burners attached below the mouth of the envelope. 5. The highest anyone has ever flown in a hot air balloon is 68,986 feet, nearly twice the cruising altitude of commercial airliners. At those heights, the people in the basket need to wear oxygen masks. 6. Another record. On January 17, 1991, entrepreneur Richard Branson and Swedish engineer Per Lindstrand became the first aeronauts, that's the official term, to cross the Pacific Ocean. They set off from Japan and traveled more than 4,700 miles in about 46 hours. There was no cheering crowd to greet them, however. The men landed on a frozen lake in the Yukon and had to be airlifted out. 7. Distance records are all the more remarkable because, unlike airplanes, balloons are very hard to steer. The wind at 100 feet might be going east, while the wind at 200 feet might be going west, says Becky Wiegland, curator of the National Balloon Museum in Indianola, Iowa. So you just keep going up and down until you get the wind that you want. That's all you can do, she says. 8. That doesn't stop balloon pilots from doing some crazy stunts. One of their favorite games is called Hare and Hound. One balloon, the hare, launches first, then all the other balloons, the hounds, chase the hare. When the hare lands, the hounds try to land as close as they can to their prey. 9. The most famous balloon hunt happened during the Civil War. An aeronaut named Thaddeus Lowe convinced President Abraham Lincoln of the merits of hot air balloon reconnaissance over the First Battle of Bull Run. Lowe went on to command the Union Balloon Corps with mixed results. The Confederate Army's attempts to burst his balloons earned Lowe the title of the most shot-at man in the war. 10. It's no surprise Lowe survived. Flying in a hot air balloon is very safe. Since 1964, the National Transportation Safety Board has investigated 799 accidents involving balloons in the United States. Those 73 resulted in fatal injuries. 11. The greatest balloon faux pas actually took place in a movie. Remember when Dorothy piles into one at the end of The Wizard of Oz to fly home to Kansas? The writing on the envelope reads, State Fair, Omaha, which is in Nebraska. To be fair, novelist Timothy Shafford has pointed out that in L. Frank Baum's novel, The Wizard came from Omaha. 12. Balloons seem to inspire creative flights of fancy. For instance, a story in the April 13th, 1844 edition of the New York Sun had an intriguing headline. Astounding news. The Atlantic crossed in 3 days. Signal triumph of Mr. Monk Mason's flying machine. The tale of the balloon that crossed an ocean before safely landing near Charleston, South Carolina, riveted readers. The problem? The story was fake news. Written by an ambitious journalist. His name? Edgar Allan Poe. 13. The reactions that hot air balloons engender have led to a fizzy tradition. Back in 19th century France, balloons would terrify the locals. So pilots packed champagne to appease people where they landed. Something similar happened one Sunday morning this past June when balloonist Mark Stodolsky unexpectedly landed in the backyard of a homeowner in Stowe, Massachusetts. Oh, do you mind? Stodolsky asked the surprised man, according to the Boston Globe. No, you're cool, he replied. Stodolsky handed a bottle of champagne to the man, who then went back to bed. The next article is called All in a Day's Work. The new busboy was just 16, and because it was his first job, we were all impressed with how well he had done on his first day, which is why we were surprised the next day when he didn't show up for a shift. Then an hour late, he came running in, red-faced and breathless. I'm sorry, he said. I forgot I had a job. That was written by Joy Massey of Albany, Oregon. I was in my patrol car by a blinking red light, the equivalent of a stop sign, when I watched an elderly man drive straight through without even slowing down. I quickly hit the siren and pulled him over. Why did you drive through the red light? I asked him. I didn't, he said. I saw you. He shook his head. I went through between the blinks. That was written by Robert Markland of Algonac, Michigan. Former Ambassador Richard Holbrooke was a brilliant but polarizing figure. Walter Isaacson wrote in the New York Times Book Review, when someone once commented that Holbrooke was his own worst enemy, a national security advisor he had worked with SNAP, not as long as I'm around. One of my math students got his hand caught in a go-kart chain and lost a third of his finger. He missed a few days of class. When he returned, I asked if his injury hindered him in any way. He was surprisingly upbeat. No, it actually helps me, he said. Now I can work fractions. Larry Weathers of Breton, Kentucky wrote this. Horrible bosses. National Bosses Day was October 16th. Here are some managers who won't be getting much appreciation. A Chinese sales group made news back in 2016 when it came out that executives forced employees who'd missed their goals to drink a cocktail of grain alcohol and live mealworms. The workers, though disgusted, didn't seem all that fazed. Said one, we have also eaten live squid and ants before. The lumber yard where I worked was experiencing losses from theft. Our vice president ordered polygraphs for every employee. A week later, on a routine patrol, the police caught the thief loading a truck with material from the yard. It was the vice president. Tanya Singer was a renowned neuroscientist and director at the Max Planck Institute for Human Cognitive and Brain Sciences in Germany. But she was forced to resign after reports of her bullying became public. Whenever anyone had a meeting with her, there was at least an even chance he or she would come out in tears, one colleague told ScienceMag.org. Singer's field of expertise, empathy. And going back to the funny little items I mentioned, if you have anything funny happen to you at work, it could be worth dollars. For details, go to rd.com/submit. That is all the time I have for this week. I will be back next week for the Reader's Digest.